This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 5th of November, 2021. And we have markets in a seeming melt up here as we look at the U.S. market yesterday posting another strong session, perhaps even the strongest for the cycle here. I haven't sliced and diced the tenths of percent or whatever, but of course, the trajectory clear. As you can see on slide two, we pulled out the NASDAQ 100. Amazing rate of increase here. It looks very steep relative to what we saw in the prior big rally wave from May through whatever that was, August or so. But actually, if you look back further and look at a logarithmic chart, we've seen this type of increase before since the pandemic lows, certainly. But I think there's something really key we need to talk about here. And Peter, of course, provided the impetus around this with his look at options volume. And just before that, I think you could build also a fundamental story that, hey, we've seen a dovish FOMC this week. We've seen some of the rate expectations backing off a bit. And even U.S. yields are lower all along the curve. A very chunky oil drop as well, not exactly hurting. We'll get to that with Ola as well. But Peter, it's a tiny chart, but it has massive implications. And we're going to definitely be following up on this in podcasts to come. So take us through what you're showing here with the daily options traded volume and what that means and how big this increase has been.
Yeah, so this is courtesy of a guy called Philip Jack, head of equity trading from one of the large pension funds here in Denmark. He posted this on Twitter. It's courtesy not only of him, but also Goldman Sachs that have compiled this amazing chart. So what is happening is that we have gone in a little bit more than 4 years from, you know, the U.S. stock option market trading a little bit less than maybe around 35% in daily traded volume versus the underlying physical shares to last month breaching more than 140%. So we have entered an environment. We have talked about a little bit before, John, in our podcast. We were very much on the top of things on options before the summer, if I recall correctly. And we have this situation again with, you know, the tail wagging the dog, basically, and a fascinating statistic. So more than 50% of all volume in U.S. stock options right now is concentrated in Tesla and in Facebook. Amazon. So
and when you say volume, you mean the notional dollar amount of those options contracts.
Yeah. The notional value traded. And I think to a large extent, it explains the recent move in Tesla, which Stijn Jacobsen, our CIO, also described as very idiosyncratic. It seems almost detached from the rest of the market. There have been some positive news news flows around Tesla, but not to explain such a move. So it's really, I think it's these market makers that are being forced to push up the share price to you know, delta hedge, basically the exposure from all this retail flow that is flowing into to Tesla. And then also I have to show this our theme baskets on slide two. I mean, yesterday's melt up was an extraordinary, I mean, just looking at this table, you can see how extraordinary it was. So mega caps were the best performing segment of the market, 3.5% return. Look at the stunning performance, up almost 40%. The alpha for the mega caps relative to the MSCI world is right now 16 percentage point for the year. It's stunning. It tells you about the narrowness of yesterday's rally. And I think, I guess, the last couple of weeks, I mean, the NASDAQ 100 is up 14% in just a little bit more than a month trading. So my takeaway is that going into the non-farm today, John, I think there is a risk of the NASDAQ going back and testing those highs, local highs from late August, early September, because, you know, the interest rate markets are still sending very strong signals and the inflationary pressures are not gone. And I'll talk about that later in the podcast when we talk about Tesla. Can I just before we jump, because I have a slide three, I think I wanted to get it out of the way because some of the interesting things we saw in the U.S. session as well. Square was down in the session, also extended trading on a disappointing earnings release. Most of the miss versus estimates were actually lower Bitcoin revenue, to me suggesting maybe that retail investors in Bitcoin is probably experiencing a little bit of a fatigue here, whereas, you know, institutional investors are still coming into the space, but that's not really benefiting Square. That's benefiting Coinbase, which if you look up Coinbase and on the Saxo platform, you'll see how phenomenal performance they've had over the 2 months. So it's the institutionals that are driving, I think, Bitcoin and cryptos right now. And then Peloton, just quickly, shares down 20%. Massive beat, and I have marked on slide 3 here with red. I mean, look at where the sell side analysts are versus the guidance from the company. They try everything they could in the conference call to talk it up, that they're coming with this new treadmill and it's going to be even a better product than their bicycle. And they had knew all along that there would be headwinds coming on the pandemic, but they didn't care enough to put that out in the forward guidance, and they're really getting the feeling the heat of the market. So very ugly there for Peloton.
I just wanted to say, you said massive beat. I assume you meant massive miss, of course.
Okay, sorry, massive miss.
And wasn't there something about some key figure that resigned ahead of this report?
Yeah, so one of the members of the auditing committee of Peloton left the company 2 weeks prior to the earnings release. I think that's a lesson learned to watch insider behavior, not only on buying and selling of stocks, but also whether they are leaving. So that's noted for the future.
Right. Okay, interesting one to watch there. Now we need to go over to crude oil because we've seen a lot of volatility, a lot of back and forth over the last two sessions. There was a key OPEC Plus meeting yesterday. Take us through why we're coming into this morning with much lower oil prices.
Well, as you said, John, the OPEC, they were pretty stubborn yesterday. The meeting almost finished before it started, because there was no doubt that they wanted to continue their steady increase with 400,000 barrels on a monthly basis, now also for December. The reason why the market sold off in response to this was the vocal protest we've seen from the U.S. administration recently, and it basically raised some speculation that the fact that they're not going to hike that could lead to some additional releases from the U.S. strategic reserves. And as you can see here on slide 7, the reason why the U.S. is worried and Biden and his administration is worried is we've got gasoline prices in the U.S. now at the highest level for this time of year in 9 years, some nearly 30% above the 5-year average. That's clearly not a vote winner. The strategic reserves is once again coming into play. And as you can see in the small insert, we've seen reserves come down from that near 700 million barrels total level we saw up until 2017. Remember, strategic reserves basically have to cover a period of supply disruption, so imports. And right now, the US got something like 100 days worth of import in storage. If we, for argument's sake, should bring it down to 90 days, which is what the IEA is targeting, then potentially they could release around 50 million barrels on top of what they have been sending into the market recently. That potentially could have a short-term impact, but the longer-term prospect for oil markets are clearly not strategic reserves releases, but more whether we are going to see enough capex moving into the fossil fuel business to ensure that we have enough supplies in the medium term. So price-wise, where are we heading? Well, we're holding above $80 in Brent. If we do break, then the first retracement level is coming in at the 78.26, and also just below that we had the recent high. So that there's a band of support down in that region. So with the global oil market still in the deficit right now, I think the correction is long overdue, but I think the depth of it is probably going to be relatively modest.
Boy, I'm really interested to watch that space, especially whether, you know, the whole theory around shale oil was that it's all ready to just turn on the taps once oil prices are a sufficient level. And they've been at that sufficient level and the taps have not really been turned on to a significant degree. So what the heck is going to get production up in the U.S.? Okay, I want to switch the gears a little bit because we look at that gold chart. I complained yesterday about it being distinctly uninteresting. My suspicion is it was the Bank of England shocker that I'll get to in a minute. Where they essentially neglected to confirm what the market was looking for them for the guidance. And we saw gold whipping back towards $1,800. It's still in this stupid range. That's so frustrating to take anything out of these moves. But do you think there's a lot of energy in gold developing here, or is this noise?
There's no energy. And that's the unfortunate bit. Yes, it was a strong recovery, but that's just a counter move to the weakness we had on Wednesday ahead of the around the FOMC announcement. So the market has basically concluded that the announcement from the FOMC was a dovish taper. They're not in any hurry to hike rates. And as you rightfully said, John, the Bank of England, surprising the market by not being the first major central bank to hike rates, did the rest of the job. And it actually happened on a day, and that's potentially a small sign of strength that it happened on a day where the dollar was strengthening. So something like gold priced in euros actually had a very, very good day yesterday, but still stuck in this, if you call it a stupid range. Looking at where real yields are today, where we once again declining negative 1.06%. Based on that, you can still argue that gold, if real yields was the only game in town, then gold is still too cheap. But there are obviously other factors at play. And I think the big one, again, we highlight that recently we've seen ETF holdings in gold declined to an 18-month low. And I think the main reason for that, we just have to look at Peter's world, the stock market. With VIX as low as it is right now, there's just simply no need for investors to be too concerned about the diversification and looking for hedges elsewhere. So I think we need to see a stock market volatility pick up for that to change. And given what you just said, that's most certainly something that could still happen.
And then rounding out the commodity space, this whole copper story where we've seen this, signs of very low supplies, inventories. I got that big recent price pump, but it's really faded back. And of course, there's all these forward concerns around China and then the property market there. But it just looks, looking at the chart, we're just sort of mean reverted back to the dead in the water, middle of the range of the last 6-8 months on slide 9 there.
Yeah, indeed. And part of the recent weakness is also explained by the prior strength, because there was quite a lot of speculative interest piling into the market on that surge up to up above 475 on high grades, these have now been taken back out of the market. As you mentioned, the stock levels, as you can see on the inserts there, these are monitored by the exchanges. They are very low right now. Shanghai just reported that their stock levels was down 24% over the last week. So that's providing some support, helping to offset the concerns about the China growth worries right now. And also with the slowdown we've seen in China, the projections for this year has moved is moving the needle back towards a copper surplus. I think the Mao was pricing in a deficit earlier, but the energy the transition over the coming years is still one that needs to be watched, because that could still take quite a lot of copper out of the market towards electrification, and that's still one of the main stories and main reason for maintaining a longer term bullish view on copper.
All right. Now, as I alluded to with the Bank of England, I want to run through a couple of FX stories here before we get back to the equity market. So first of all, we had the Czech Central Bank yesterday hiking a full 125 basis points, taking the policy rate there to 2.75%. There was only about a 75 basis point to 100 basis point rate hike expected. Hawkish guidance, one of the more credible central banks. And you've got quite a carry trade there in Europe with long Czech, short euro. I wonder if the market's concerned about this 25 area. It seems to be a hard floor for that pair, but there's plenty of carry to pick up there as long as the Czech Central Bank continues to maintain credibility, which they seem to want to do. The latest CPI print at 4.9% expected to rise, according to the governor of the Czech Central Bank, towards 7% over the winter. So still negative real yields, but at least they're trying to do something about it. And then the big shocker yesterday for the G10 currencies was the Bank of England, which really did a poor job of communicating coming into this meeting, some very confusing, almost a desperate sense of urgency in some of the statements, especially from Governor Bailey, that led the market to believe and was leaning for a small rate hike yesterday of 15 basis points, and then plenty more to come in the forward curve. Instead, it got no hike. And it got a Bank of England governor who was seemed very content to be a bit cautious here, waiting to see how the jobs market shaped up post the end of these furlough schemes, which ran out at the end of September. And they want to see some of that data. So this really required a tremendous adjustment. It may be a one-off adjustment. We may not develop much momentum on this, but it was a big adjustment because the market now doesn't trust Bank of England guidance, especially when you see the governor saying something like it's not our job to guide interest rate hike expectations day by day and week by week. So this obviously triggered weaker sterling. You can see on slide four, look on the right there, that December 2022 short sterling interest rate future adjusting some 30 basis points. So about a full rate hike taken out of the forward curve for next year, a big one-off adjustment. Cable below that key 136 area and only the last shreds of the range for the year. I think to get significantly lower there, we need to see the dollar view shaping up. And on that note, I have a little bit of a note here on Eurodollar. You know, we had a dovish FOMC. We've seen the U.S. rate expectations come off a bit with that, as you can see on slide five, with that December 2022 Eurodollar stir rising a bit, but it's risen more locally in Europe. I think some of this is about volatility linked to rate curve bets. So let's not take all these as explicit pricing in of where the central bank is going to be. But nonetheless, the forward spread for the EU versus the US, if you look at the two-year yield spread, Europe to US, you can see on the right there, that blue line at new lows of the cycle below minus 100 basis points. You see the sort of general correlation there with the Eurodollar exchange rate. Now, this does not mean that we have to break lower in Eurodollar. It just supports the view lower if this is where the market is trading or the theme the market is trading on. We've seen plenty of market regimes where the yield spread did not matter. It's just an interesting test, especially as we're headed into a key macro data point out of the U.S. today. And then you have the trend overview on slide six. You can see where the big momentum shifts have been upwards for the yen, as we're seeing yields all along the major yield curves lower. That makes some sense. And we're seeing some of these commodity currencies really struggling in momentum terms. And I put up Aussie yen. You can see there's still plenty of room for even more consolidation lower without it breaking that big uptrend move. But we need to figure out, you know, where are the themes in this market in coming days soon. Otherwise, we're sort of back to a limbo on this theme of reflation, commodities up, and something like the lower yielders down. Okay, let's get back to the equity space. I think I've said my piece there on, and I've got a couple of preview notes on macro, but we'll talk about that at the end of the calendar today, it being a key day with the U.S. jobs report. But well, since Tesla is the stock market, Peter, what do you have to say about Tesla? It looks like you got something up for us on slide 10.
Yeah, so Tesla is hiking their prices on Model 3 and Model Y for the second time third time in the last month. And I think this price chart on slide 10 on lithium prices, together with the already known price rises in more traditional raw materials such as aluminum, steel, copper, which are extensively used in production of cars, also have risen quite dramatically per all this many comments on this podcast the past couple of months. But lithium here is a key input source for the lithium ion batteries that are used. And so Tesla is basically just passing on these rising costs to consumers. I think they have raised prices somewhere between 4% and 8% over these three couple of times. And it fits with other companies basically are moving into passing on mode also in China. So we expect the consumer price index to rise there. And actually, I forgot to say in my small equity update because I was running out of time, but it's also important to know what's going on in China or the Hang Seng market, right? So you have this very strong rally yesterday and have so for a couple of weeks in the rest of the equity market. But it's just, you know, China right now is just completely decoupled from the rest of the world. And the PBOC has boosted its daily liquidity injections. You have Chinese, Vanke, and Evergrande, two of the large real estate developers, declining again today in Hang Seng trading. So we didn't put too much focus on China today, but it should definitely be on people's radar because it is a risk that was lurking under the surface. Slide 11, today's earnings releases. We have Siemens Gamesa. I expect that to be pretty horrible given what we saw from Vestas earlier this week, especially because Siemens Gamesa is a much bigger player in offshore wind turbines, and offshore wind turbines is less profitable than onshore, and thus I expect those companies to be hit harder from the rising commodity prices. But that's a guess from my side. Alibaba earnings estimates are just coming down constantly. We're still down 50% from the peak last year, and the big question is whether Alibaba can actually, you know, can they escape the Chinese slowdown? And what about regulation? You have Bailey Gifford, the very famous growth investor out of Scotland, taking one of the leading articles on the front page today of Financial Times, saying investors shouldn't quit on China. There's a lot of growth, and a lot of companies will grow out of China. And well, I don't think people should quit China, but you could be nervous about China, at least in this transition that is taking place. And I was actually looking at, you know, performance between their treasury bonds, or sorry, the government bonds have almost delivered over the past 10 years the same same total return as their equity market, and with significantly lower volatility. So that's the key question going forward. Can you actually get, you know, the same returns at the Chinese equity market, because it's not turning shareholder friendly? Can you get the same return by just investing in their government bonds? Because if it's turning to be a more planned economy again and less about the private sector, and you have the common prosperity, then maybe you shouldn't be too aggressive in equities. And then finally, the EOG Resources, one of the large US shale producers in oil and gas. I think it's critical, given what Ole said about the oil market, whether these players in the US are finally considering ramping up their production, and that would be the outlook for next year. So let's see what they say on that.
Okay, there's lots on going on today. it's a long podcast here. I want to say a couple things. One thing that's not on the calendar, but there was a news item out yesterday that Powell visited the White House yesterday, and then Yahoo News, I'm not going to put these words in my mouth, they're not for me, has a headline that the White House tips off senators that Powell could be renominated for the Fed. So that keeps at least the hawkish potential of a Bostic nomination or some other surprise on the other side with Brainard off the table, if that proves the case. It's going to be coming up very soon, this announcement, one way or another. Okay, very briefly, let's look at today's calendar. I actually don't want to run through everything. Do note a couple of Bank of England speakers are out. The market's going to be a bit touchy around those statements and not knowing really what to do with them after all the confusion at this last meeting. Key is U.S. Jobs report and to what degree the market cares to adjust expectations. Now, given the guidance in Powell's press conference that they're willing to tolerate and consider inflation as, quote, transitory well into 2022, it really makes it tough for the jobs situation to improve sufficiently quickly to really sort of jolt the market into believing the Fed is going to taper those purchases more quickly and eventually have to hike rates sooner than it is saying it will. We're not saying it's not going to happen, but it just means we need to see the data prints there. And not just non-farm payrolls, where it's really hard to see a really sustained fast pace of payrolls growth when you have all these disruptions in the economy, millions on retirement enjoying their Tesla options and their in some cases, and of course their portfolios having done well, but also vaccine disruptions, vaccine mandates, keeping back people out of the airport, out of the workforce. It's going to be, I think, up to the average hourly earnings and to what degree these really start to show possible evidence of a wage price spiral. So we'll be watching that today. We're expected to dip back down on the month-on-month rise in average hourly earnings to 0.4% versus the very hot 0.6 in September, and an annualized rate of 4.9%. And that's our year-on-year, not annualized, year-on-year rate, far above anything we were seeing really prior to the pandemic outbreak. Now, of course, there's still disruptions, et cetera, the data needs to settle for probably a little bit longer, but still, this is a very hot wage growth. At what point does it need to beat sufficiently to surprise the market, really jolt the market? I'm not sure, but that's the thing we'd have to look for, I think, to see any major adjustment in the forward rate curve. And then maybe that could unseat longer-term U.S. yields. I don't know. Then we look at next week, plenty on the table there as well. Just would pull out the Chinese PPI and the CPI, which is still ridiculously low, the CPI. That PPI expected at a new high print of 12.5% year on year. It's a massive level. Obviously points to the global inflationary pressures, and it is a key barometer for global inflation. U.S. October CPI up as well there. So, strap into your seats. So we think that the volatility risks here are very significant, both obviously to the upside as we've seen recently, but also to the downside if this situation hits an air pocket and we have too much of this derivatives tail, if you will, wagging the market dog. These are remarkable times. Let's see where things head. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.